97.9 FM, WCHL, and the UNC College of Journalism and Mass Communication presents Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. Sports Focus is dedicated to in-depth examinations of issues of overarching importance in the sports world. Each week, we'll discuss problems and look for solutions to problems in professional, collegiate, and amateur sports. From Carroll Hall on the UNC campus, here's your host, journalism professor Charlie Tuggle.
Welcome to Sports Focus. Our topic today, the idea of paying college athletes. Joining us to weigh in on that subject, Richard Southall, the director of the College Sport Research Institute at the University of South Carolina, and Ellen Starowski, a professor in Drexel University's Department of Sport Management and a former coach and athletics director. Both have written extensively about the impact of big money on big-time athletics. Welcome to both of you.
Good morning, Charlie.
Good morning.
Great to be here.
The cover story in the September 16th issue of Time magazine is titled, It's Time to Pay College Athletes. Not a question, a statement. Ellen, let's start with you. Is it time to do what the article's author calls an ethical imperative?
I think it is an ethical imperative. We've been in a circumstance now for decades of witnessing athletic scandal after athletic scandal, and I think that this is emblematic of a business model that can no longer be sustained, and in the process, it's created a morally compromised system that really begrudges and strips away rights that athletes should have and does not allow higher education to be the best that it should be. So I think we are long past the time when college athletes should be paid.
Richard, the article quotes you as saying, living a lie is a hard thing to do. What did you mean by that?
Well, I think it goes to exactly what Ellen was talking about, is when you have to create so many fictions to sustain the collegiate model of athletics, that's a difficult thing to do. It's sort of ethical whack-a-mole that you continually have to justify and come up with convoluted arguments about why college athletes, profit athletes, the ones in the revenue sports, should not have access to the free market like everyone else in that industry.
Well, now the counter argument is, don't athletes already receive compensation in the form of an athletic scholarship that's worth $100,000, maybe $200,000 over the course of 4 years. Ellen?
I know that argument is offered many times to oppose paying athletes. However, when you go back and you look at what that scholarship means, that scholarship is actually intended to be pay for athletic performance. And I think that we get into this thicket of terminology that confuses the issue, and it's designed to do that. You know, we have terms like student athlete that were manufactured, that were invented take away our attention from the fact that we had created a pay-for-play system in athletics with the creation of the athletic scholarship. So I think all we're really doing now is coming to a point of having to deal with the consequences of that kind of deception for a long period of time. Athletes put into this system are being reprogrammed constantly to get them to believe a different reality from what they're actually in. And I think we really have got to come clean in terms of what's actually been going on, pay the athletes who are the revenue producers, and come up with a financial model that will be sustainable for what might be called a college pro league.
Richard, I've actually heard some call it the plantation mentality. Would you agree with that assessment?
Well, I think that using the plantation metaphor may be very appropriate, but I think it also brings in some issues of race and ethnicity that are sometimes cloud the issue. So the metaphor that I think is more illuminative is that of a company town in which the workers are technically free, but the workers don't have access to representation. The Student Athlete Advisory Committee is, notice, advisory. College athletes, profit athletes in the Division I level are not voting members of the NCAA. And back to Ellen's point earlier, I think it's interesting that in the NCAA bylaws, pay, the word pay is defined as any non-approved compensation. So the NCAA and colleges and universities are fine compensating athletes for their athletic labor. They just want to tightly control the kind of compensation. So you're not going to allow college athletes, the profit athletes, to have access to cash, but you're going to pay them in a grant and aid, which is akin to scrip, which can only be redeemed in the athletic department company town setting.
And Ellen, I don't want to oversimplify this, but does it come down to definitions, how the NC2A defines pay, how the NC2A defines amateur?
Yes, I think that we've been in this box for so long. When we have these conversations, and there was this interesting exchange between a Sports Illustrated reporter and Miles Brand several years ago, where the reporter was asking Miles Brand about, what defines an amateur, and he would say, well, it's somebody who can't be paid, and the question would follow, well, how do you determine who gets paid? And Miles Brand was saying, well, we do, and it just became so circular in terms of its logic. They can't be paid because we say they can't be paid. When in point of fact, they are being paid. They're just not being paid fairly, and they're not being treated fairly. And so I think we really have to get outside of that NCAA definitional box and really look at this with a clear eye in terms of what's actually going on and how distorted the system has become. This whole discussion about extra benefits, for example, this week we've had the issues surrounding Oklahoma State and players being paid under the table. The reason why players get paid under the table is that that this is not a fair compensation system to begin with, and that is emblematic of a system that runs like that. So I think we have to get outside of the NCAA box, and we have to talk about this in realistic terms in terms of what's actually going on.
We're talking about the idea that athletes should be paid on college campuses. Sports Focus will return right after this.
You're listening to Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. And now, back to the show on 97.9 FM WCHL.
Welcome back to Sports Focus. Our guests are Ellen Starowski and Richard Southall. We're discussing whether it's time to start paying college athletes. Richard, if we pay college athletes, is the idea of student athlete officially dead, or is it already officially dead?
Well, I'm not sure. That's an interesting question. At what point does a concept or a term have legitimacy, and at what point does it no longer have any semblance to reality? And so that's a deeper philosophical question, and almost really an epistemological question. But I think it's interesting that when, again, building off of what Ellen was talking about with Dr. Brand's comments, he defined amateur as referring to the participants, not the system. So he was fine with a collegiate model in which one of the primary purposes was revenue generation. And what you have now is a system that relies on the Division I level specifically, relies on the athletic labor of about 4% of the athletes who generate all the revenue. The expenditure athletes, the athletes whose market value is less than the grant and aid, they're doing just fine. This is actually a great system for them. So they get this access to an education. There's very little evidence of great deal of clustering in expenditure sports. Athletes in those sports may have clustering, but they don't have super clustering. So I think, again, the term student-athlete was a fiction from the beginning, designed to forestall workers' compensation claims. So yes, I think it more and more people recognize that that term has no meaning.
Ellen, the two main ideas I've heard floated are direct cash payments to athletes or allowing them to have endorsement deals. Would you support one or both?
My preference actually would be to create a college pro league that would have a collective bargaining agency to represent the players. And to have them paid outright. I think that that is not going to get a lot of traction at this particular moment in time, although I think that's the right way to go. In the alternative, the opportunity for athletes to receive endorsement dollars to create some kind of a trust fund to defer payment to them. I think these kinds of ideas at least will help to recognize that that the revenue-producing athletes are not being compensated appropriately and that the system is benefiting from this. You know, when we have college coaches in those programs that are realizing salary increases of 650% during the same period of time that we have athletes still locked into what I would call a salary structure that was created in the 1950s, I think that speaks to the incredible inequities that exist in this system. And so I think either of those alternatives will help move us forward, but I prefer to have them paid outright.
Richard, faculty members, of course, often decry what Ellen just mentioned, and that is the enormous salaries of sports coaches. And yet, I, as a faculty member, no one lines up at the box office to get tickets to come watch me teach. So there is a difference between big-time college coaches and faculty members in terms of worth to the university.
Well, I don't know if it's worth specifically to the university, but it's the ability to capitalize on your market value. So you have a free market system at work in which the only people that do not have access to this free market are the profit athletes in these revenue sports. Faculty members make different salaries based on what they do for the university. If someone is in the medical school at the University of North Carolina, they will likely have a higher salary than someone in the English department. So we always have these differences in salaries, but the difference is that faculty members can negotiate, and let's say, for example, if a faculty member gets a better offer from another university, he or she can take that. And they don't have to quit teaching for a year and sit out a year when they change jobs. So there are so many things that just are, the system again is a fiction and a lie, and it takes so much mental and moral effort to keep the system going.
Ellen, and Richard has referred to this a couple of times, the difference between the revenue athletes, football, men's basketball primarily, and everyone else. Are we talking two different sets of rules? We certainly seem to have two different ways of dealing with those athletes even now.
Yeah, Charlie, before I address that, I want to go back to something that you said in terms of faculty members and who might come to watch them do their work compared to the head football coach or the head men's basketball coach. And I think it's important to clarify that people are not paying to watch head football coaches coach. They're watching to play the athlete, to see the athletes on the field. That's what corporations are paying for. That's what television is paying the rights for. And I think that that's oftentimes what gets kind of lost in this discussion. These players may be young people, but they are still commodities who are being undervalued. And so I think that's one thing that I would hope that our discussion would take us farther down the path of recognizing. So, and having said all of that, You know, do we have two sets of rules? We absolutely have two sets of rules. And I think that this discussion really highlights that. We have a class of individuals who are on our college campuses who are charged with something that no other class is charged with. They are charged with revenue generation, and that revenue is then parceled out to all manner of other things and is not directed back to the people who actually do the work. So I think we really need to reexamine that, and it is a moral imperative. You know, from a worker perspective, where else in America do we have people who are working, who then have the revenue that they generate taken away from them and distributed without any opportunity for them to have a voice? So I think the stakes are pretty high on this for everybody involved.
We are discussing the idea of paying college athletes on Sports Focus, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. And now, back to the show on 97.9 FM WCHL.
Welcome back to Sports Focus. Our guests are Ellen Starowski and Richard Southall, and we're discussing whether it's time to start paying college athletes. Ellen, just one example. The Pac-12 has a $3 billion TV deal. And you have referenced the moral imperative several times. Does that seem immoral, obviously, that the athletes are not realizing any of that money?
I don't think that the television deal itself is immoral. I think the fact that athletes who are the centerpiece of that sport entertainment entity are not receiving the full benefit of the work that they do.
Richard, I wanted to go back to a different example, and I'm going to mention Scotty McCreery. He is a college student at NC State and yet makes a lot of money off his efforts as an entertainer. Are we talking apples and oranges, or is it pretty much the same sort of deal that college athletes should be able to capitalize on their market value?
Well, I would find that question interesting if NC State and other college and universities had recording studios or recording labels, whether they would allow Scotty McCreery to make money in the record industry if they had that industry as well. That's an interesting example, because he can still attend classes, even though I bet you he signs autographs and his memorabilia and those kind of things, he might get compensated for it. So I think in any other setting, we see how this, you know, is no big deal. But then we seem to, and fans seem to want to grasp so tightly at something that, you know, we should have let go many, many years ago.
So, Ellen, Johnny Manziel, for example, should have the same rights that Scotty McCreery has as a college student, correct?
Yeah, I believe that is true. And I think the dilemma that we get into is we have this perception that somehow Manziel is doing something wrong. And of course, you know, he's not been proven to have really done anything wrong, right, so far. But we look at athletes who are in this circumstance, and somehow we take great exception to their conduct. When in point of fact, you know, there are many people who are engaging in the same kind of behavior in other industries, who would never be perceived as doing anything wrong. So I do think that he should have that same opportunity.
And Richard, why is it that we take exception to that? Is it because we've been conditioned to take exception to that, that an athlete profits from his marketability?
Well, and again, I think it goes back to not being able to get out of this conceptual box that has been created over the years. And folks seem to want to hold on to their traditions and those sorts of things that we've had over the years. And so that's really why I think change is not going to come from within the system, but from without or from outside the system.
Very quickly, Ellen, administrators like to say that athletics is the front porch of the university. It's much, much more than that, is it not?
Absolutely. You know, we're now in a circumstance and have been for a long time where colleges and universities are, you know, clearly in the entertainment business. And I think that, you know, that this isn't just window dressing for the university. I think that they are in big time entertainment. And as a result of that, the way in which they engage with that business should really be reexamined. And at the present time, I think that the governance structures do not allow for the appropriate regulation of that business. And that's the reason why I think we do need to have external intervention. And just as Richard said.
Excellent. And we will have to end it there. That does it for this edition of Sports Focus. My thanks to our guests, Ellen Starowski and Richard Southall. Thanks also to producer Justin Blankenship and to engineer Gary Kirk. Thanks to you for listening. Cheers.
Thanks to Richard Southall, Mark Nagel, and Deborah Southall of the College Sport Research Institute at the University of South Carolina for their research and guidance and for access to CSRI's international network of sources. Sports Focus is a production of UNC's College of Journalism and Mass Communication.